What if I tell you that having a baby could be easy? How can you have your beautiful, positive, unmedicated, and natural birth so that you can step into your conscious motherhood? Hello, my name is Bibi. I am a midwife, a birth coach, and I am an early motherhood coach. And I'm here to show you how birth can be easy. You know why? You're never going to forget that day, and you want it to be the best day of your life. Tune in while we'll dive in on how you can have your positive birth and you can have a positive motherhood. Happy listening. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this new episode of Your Holistic Midwife. It's always me, Bibi, your favorite midwife. And today I am joined, and I'm so honored, by a special guest, and her name is Christine. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Bibi.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. So I would say that let's start by saying a little bit about yourself for the listener that maybe don't know who you are.
Sure. My name is Christine Loria. I am a certified professional midwife. I live in the U.S. I've been a midwife for 35 years now. I was a community-based midwife for many years, and actually practiced without any kind of registration for about 17 years. Which was quite delightful and very, very liberating. I became certified and went down that road and, you know, started following the rules and things. And they're very different from state to state here in the U.S. So it's not one set of regulations, unfortunately. So, but in most recent years, I was interested in doing humanitarian aid. I did a little bit throughout the years, but just for maybe a few months at a time. And now I work for Doctors Without Borders, and I go out into the field and do maternal infant health and all sexual and reproductive health care, which includes maternity care and contraceptive care, safe abortion care, and sexual violence survivors care.
Wow, amazing. And tell us a little bit more about, you said you were just like a traditional midwife initially. What was that like? You mean like without registration or without studying? Yeah. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, so I did an apprenticeship with a midwife in the Amish country. And you know, the Amish, they stay home with everything, and also any little community hospitals that are around the Amish community. Even if you were to bring an Amish person in, they're never going to come back at you for that because they support the Amish religious freedom, right? So it's very interesting because, you know, if you go in and you're anything but that, they're not going to support it. But the Amish, they always did. So it didn't matter what they were dealing with. They knew the Amish were going to stay at home with twins, with breech, a VBAC for the few that ever had cesareans. So, you know, they, it was a very safe community in which to practice. And so yes, I did all of those things in my apprenticeship. I did twins and breeches, you know, VBACs, yes, but they weren't nearly as abundant as they are now, because less, that was in the late 80s, less women were having cesarean sections, right? So VBACs were, there were just a few here and there, and then it became more and more. So, because of being able to, because of not having any registration, certification, regulatory things to follow, I just did everything that the senior midwife did. I learned how to do all the things, and we did not order ultrasounds. Again, those weren't even as popular then. Usually a woman had one, maybe two ultrasounds in her pregnancy, if that, but not the people staying home, and certainly not the Amish. And so there were a lot of, surprise. We didn't know a lot of things about, because we didn't have fetal surveillance. So, but I learned how to do things with my hands. I learned how to palpate the baby and the weight and the, where it was, where the placenta was, how much amniotic fluid there was. And even if somebody did get an ultrasound towards the end, as I got, further along and, 5, 6, 8 years of practice, and I would palpate their belly, I would estimate what the fetal weight was. And it was always more accurate than the ultrasound. So
Love
my hands are
it.
pretty good and they continue to be very good. So because of that, I had to really rely on yes, what I was seeing, what I was palpating, what I was, just all the observations, and then of course my intuition, which, you have it or you don't, but it's also something that you develop along with all your other skills. And so for me, it works quite well. So it was quite nice to practice those 17 years in freedom, because literally everything I was doing could get me into trouble. So it's the why. So why not stay home with somebody just because their membranes released and now it's beyond 24 hours? Well, so what? Wait, I'm going to get in trouble being with her regardless if I'm going to get in trouble. So, but I always transferred in with people. Nobody, I never did get in trouble then. And then once I was certified. And it was
So
I got license.
how did you do the transition to
How did I do it?
certification?
Yeah, so when I first started in midwifery, we didn't even have certified professional midwives, and the North American Registry of Midwives was just coming into being, and so they weren't really widespread. And keep in mind, we didn't have social media, so everything was word of mouth. I couldn't just
I
click,
love
click, click and
it.
look
I'm
something
like,
up, right?
what do you mean you didn't have social media?
We had to get stuff in the mail. If I wanted information, I had to send off for it. I had to write somebody to send it to me. And so I had to wait for that letter to get there and then for it to come back. And it's weeks and weeks. So, but anyway, so after a while, a lot of my friends, a lot of the midwives I was meeting, were starting to get their CPM. And it was through an apprenticeship model. It's quite different than it is now. It's still apprenticeship model, but it's much more rigorous, and there's a lot more didactics involved. And I felt like, okay, the state that I was in, they were going to start licensing midwives there. And then I knew that was the beginning of the end for me, because if I continued to practice illegally, I knew that one of the midwives would, because they're very, and they would
Yeah, I know
turn
what
me
you
in for
mean.
sure.
It looks like it hasn't changed.
No, I don't think so. And so I thought about it. And so what at that time, and they don't have this anymore, but at that time, the North American Registry of Midwives had a so there was the apprentice route, and then they had the grand midwife. So they were aware that for decades before they existed as a regulatory agency, there were midwives practicing who had a whole lot of experience, and they didn't want to go and be an apprentice with somebody with less experience than them to get their CPM. So they would grandmother people in, and you had to document like 100 births, and you had to have the records for all 100, and then you had to have your skills tested. And there were just all these things. They don't have that route anymore, because everybody that could have gone through it should have by this time. So they've discontinued it. But that's the route that I went. And then I had to sit for the exam, and I did. And then I was a CPM. And I like to tell like young midwives when I'm teaching here, I say to them, and the day that I got my CPM, and put those letters after my name, I wasn't any better of a midwife than I had been before I put the letters after my name. So it wasn't, it's not about, it wasn't about that. It was just, it was a reassurance to people that were hiring me, that I had credentials, and because it was becoming more important. And curiously enough, I was, I'll be brief in this story, but it's a very annoying one. I had a doula contact me in the middle of the night and say, I'm at a birth and I have another doula client who's birthing at this particular hospital. She's in labor. She's a primip. Can you go to her and be with her until I can get there? Yes, I got there. Long story short, she is going to be having this baby. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I should like check you. And I'm a midwife, so I can, like, I know you hired a doula, but I, you know, if you, it's cold. It was snowy and cold. It was February. And I said, let's check you. And, I checked her and she was 8. And I'm like, if you want to go to the hospital and have this baby, and she got in the shower and I'm like, this is the beginning of the end. Her husband came out and he said, she doesn't want to go to the hospital. Can you stay home with us? And I'm like, yes, I can. But I am not going to, I don't know anything about you. I don't have your records or anything like that. But the baby was coming. So I'm like, okay, let me grab my bags. And my bags were in the car. I brought them in. And she proceeded to push the baby out very nicely and no problems at all. And then afterwards they said, what about the hepatitis B shot? And I said, oh, you don't need that straight away. But when you go to your pediatrician, you can ask. And he said, oh no, she is a carrier of hepatitis B. I said, oh, you need the immunoglobulin. I said, yeah, you need that within 12 hours. So at 8 a.m. when your pediatrician opens, call them, let them know what happened. We had already called the hospital to say she's not coming in. She had her baby. Okay, fine. And they were a little annoyed, but whatever. They couldn't do anything about it. And then they went into the pediatricians. They got the immunoglobulin and whatever. And then the pediatrician turned me in for attending their birth at home. I was certified, 6 months. And so I'm like, see, this is what happens. Now I have something to lose. And they can take it away from me, you know, and nothing came of it. The state dropped it. She was just being punitive. What was I supposed to do? Say, no, I'm not going to help you and walk out and have them have their baby. Well, I was very responsible and told them what they needed to do. And there was nothing was wrong. It was just her opinion. They shouldn't have had the baby at home.
Yeah. And in that sense, you know, luckily that it happened that way, because then you learned.
yep exactly
because so, you know, like even in this area someone was reported and I learned very quickly that, like, you will get reported, you can get reported, but it's okay, because if you haven't done anything wrong, nothing will come out of it, you know, like it's okay. It's not okay because it's not okay to be reported for this, but in the culture that we live in, you know, where a lot of midwives are driven by the fear of being reported or of losing the registration, you won't lose your registration if you haven't done anything wrong.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And so then in your career, you have been supporting Breach and Multiples. Is that right?
Yes, from the very beginning. And I learned that it was just, you know, sometimes some babies are breached, 3 to 4% a term, and some women have more than one baby in their uterus, and there are extra considerations with that. But you know, it's all we're meant to do this. You know, we're mammals.
Yes, absolutely. So let's just dive in into the topic of this podcast, because I really want to get into multiples and especially twins, because I think we can get in a little bit triplets, but triplets, it's like another pair of...
super rare. Exactly. A whole other level.
exactly. But the thing is, you probably maybe have noticed as well, twins is becoming more common, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we are having more and more twins. And the thing is that is leading to more and more cesarean sections on these twins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe let's start with, when we're talking about twins, a lot of people just think, okay, twins is two babies, but there is a little bit of distinctions, I guess, between different type of twins.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to depend on the the placentas basically. Are there two separate placentas or is there one big one and we're sharing stuff? So having an early ultrasound to determine the chorionicity. And so, most twins are di-di twins, dichorionic and diamniotic. And then I think the remaining 25% are the monodi. And then there are very rarely 1 in 30,000 pregnancies, I think, are mono-mono. And we don't want to attend those at home ever, ever,
Yes.
ever. So
Okay, so
let me just make that clear.
exactly. So
I
let's just put it straight,
just
okay?
did, but I had no idea even, and even if I had had an idea, they were still going to come out vaginally. But I was shocked. It wasn't until the placenta came out and I realized it was one big placenta with
Oh, so
one
you
big
had a
embryo.
mono-mono.
Mono, it full term in South Sudan, no problems whatsoever. And I was in complete shock when I looked at the placenta. So I'm like, wow, like these babies were blessed. This, but I don't
Oh my
know how
gosh.
they were beautiful. So
Yeah.
I have attended, not intentionally, but again, like I said, even if we had known, I still would have to attend them vaginally because they're not going
Yeah.
to section somebody because of twins.
Oh, so
So,
overseas is different.
yeah. So when I'm working in like a refugee camp or in a conflict zone somewhere, we are a lot of times we don't either have access to cesarean, or if we do, we only do it for maternal indications. So if the mother had come in and she was, bleeding profusely, and we needed to get the babies out straight away, and she wasn't dilated, yes, then we would take her to the OT then for a cesarean. But otherwise, I'm expected to do everything vaginally, and this is for, just for the sake of the mother, because a cesarean is very risky for her. And if the baby survives, the baby survives. If it does not, or they do not, then that's secondary to the mother's life. So, and that's the way we do it in the field.
Yeah,
But the
yeah, yeah.
majority of the time, I can get them both safely, safely over. So that's
Yeah,
good.
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So let's say that usually when we do know that it's mono-mono, so it's one big placenta, they are sharing in they are in the same sac. Normally, like we wouldn't attend a home birth, but also keep in mind that these twins usually they will be at the hospital from like 20 weeks or something, like pretty early, isn't it?
Early. Yeah,
Yeah.
closely monitored, very closely monitored, and probably won't get anywhere near term, and high risk for TTTS and all sorts of other complications. So, yes.
Instead, if we talk about mono die or die die, that's different.
Because they, so with a di-di, they have completely separate placentas, although sometimes when they come out, they're fused, but there's no communicating vasculature. The placentas aren't communicating with each other. They just might grow into each other a little bit, but both of the si systems for the babies are separate.
So it's like having two babies in one mom,
Yep, exactly.
pretty
Yeah,
much. Two
like
different
two
babies, two
single
different
twins. Yeah.
entities. They're like
Yes.
brothers or sisters, like two
Yeah.
babies.
Yep, exactly. And then monodi will have they will share they will have their own internal separate sacs, but then the external sac is the same. So they do have a divider between them. So then their cords and things don't get tangled up in each other, like with mono-monos.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because one of the risk it's the cord, the tangling like between each other with mono, mono, mono. And this doesn't happen with die die because they still have the internal sac that separates them. Yeah.
Right,
yeah
exactly. Yes,
perfect.
mono dye as well, and but they still need to be monitored
yeah
at least until the, you know, the end of the second trimester
yeah
for TTTS. They're at
yeah
higher risk for that. It's about 10 or 12%. So
yeah
not super high, but
yeah
we want to watch them and make sure that, you know, that they're okay. If they don't develop it by the third trimester, it's exceedingly rare for them to get it. And then they can space out the scans. And this information is from an MFM friend of mine who I've talked extensively to about multiples. And because I really want to understand and I want to give good evidence-based information, I don't want to just be like, well, my opinion is, this is actually his opinion and this is how he does it. And he's like, I really, after 26 weeks, you're not going to get TTTS. It would be so incredibly rare. Anything is possible, but it's probably not going to happen. So I might wait another month before I do another ultrasound, unless there's another indication. Obviously, you know, with TTTS, if they start to get polyhydramnios, you're going to see a jump in the measurement of the belly. And so that's an indication. Oh, maybe we should do another ultrasound just to make sure everything's okay. But otherwise, you know, there's no reason to have to do such more regular fetal surveillance like we did in this second trimester.
Yeah, absolutely. And so once they reach the third trimester, if they are dye or mono dye, can they have a home birth or do they need to have either a C-section or an induction at the hospital?
Well, it depends on who you ask.
Well, I'm asking you.
So, yes, I mean, if we have a nice, healthy mom that has a very, you know, there's her health profile is there's nothing concerning there, and she hasn't developed gestational diabetes or hypertension or preeclampsia or you know, and her hemoglobin is good. There is no reason why either mono dye or dye twins cannot be done at home if they get to term, if they can get to 36 week, ideally 37. But a lot of midwives will give the 36-week cutoff. And I routinely see twins going 39, 40, 41. I know of just recently a set of twins that went to almost just 42 weeks. So
amazing. Amazing. Yeah,
so it's possible. And that it requires, you know, it requires a good diet, high in protein, and really somebody who knows that they are in charge of their prenatal care. They can get all the ultrasounds in the world, but prenatal care is what happens in between visits with your midwife, right? And so, you know, I see a common denominator amongst the women that I help, because I don't practice here in the US anymore, except once in a while for a specialty birth like that. But when I was practicing, I just noticed that the level of responsibility that these women took for their selves and their bodies and their babies and making sure they're getting enough protein and really working hard and, you know, getting regular exercise and just really taking good care of themselves, you know, and not buying into the I'm high risk just because they have two babies. It's like nothing makes them high risk. There's a higher probability of certain things happening. And if they don't happen, you're not high risk. You develop hypertension, you've just become a little bit high risk. Sorry, you can't stay home now. But otherwise, it's just somebody having two babies and with a great, great hemoglobin, no problems with the blood sugar, no problems with the blood pressure, which that's not high risk. It's just somebody having two babies.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I love what you said, because I was called just recently by a colleague of mine to do like a twin education, you know, and it was about preparation for birth. And they're expecting me to be like, okay, so, you know, when you are in labor, this is what you have to do. This is what you have to do. But instead, I said just what you said. So preparation for birth for twins is actually your prenatal care. So I want you to eat a high protein diet. That's the first thing that I told her. I needed to start exercising, okay? Because your body is stretching and you are not at full capacity right now, and you want your body to be able to actually accommodate two baby at full capacity. And those are all the things that I said. And I feel like sometimes, especially like with the twins pregnancy, we are so fixated on how big are the babies, what's going on with the fluid, the placenta, the cord, where is the insertion, velamentous insertion, like marginal insertion, all these things that, I mean, like they don't matter as much as if the baby are healthy and they're growing okay, you know? But we don't actually look at the general health of mom, which is more important. So we want mom to arrive to the birth as if she was about to go to war, you know? So ready with a lot of iron in her blood, you know, with a lot of mobility in her body as well, you know, like not just lying flat in a bed for months, because otherwise, how is the body going to run this marathon of two babies?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I completely agree.
I just make sure that my twin moms, I'm like, you are, do not buy into the high risk thing. Do not, I'm not considering you that, or I wouldn't even be here right now. I'm doing prenatal care with you if I felt like you were high risk. And so, I think our language matters. I think how we treat people matters. And I think what often happens with people and that are going a traditional medical route, it's like they get a scan, they see that there's two babies, and whether they're mono dye or dye dye, oh my gosh, now you're high risk. They're labeled high risk right then and there. And then they're like, oh, then they treat themselves like they're high risk.
That's
And
exactly right. And I've been through that because I was labeled at risk at 9.6 week when I did my first ultrasound. You know, two babies, high risk. And I'm like, no, I just did not bought it. I was like, no, it's not true. I am not high risk. And I kept saying to everybody, I am low risk. It's just two babies. I'm fine. I am low risk, you know? But even in our guidelines, you know, twins, it says category, I think like you see, which is high risk. And so if like what happened, I think most of the time, like especially you know, when you have twins on board, I guess the first thing that happened is that they start talking about growth. And I guess the first thing that they say is the babies have different weight. Do you want to say more into that? Because I think that's the number one thing that actually puts mom into maybe my body is actually not capable of, you know, growing these babies because they have two different weights.
And it's interesting because, if you have identical twins, theoretically they're going to be usually within a few ounces of one another. But if you have fraternal twins, they're going to be just as different as your first baby weighs this much, and then your next pregnancy, your next baby, they don't weigh the same thing. We don't have three, four, five, six babies all weighing within a few ounces of each other. There's a difference between weight with genders. Boys tend to weigh more. So we see this, and so people, so yes, I think a lot of women get scared because they are told, oh, yes, this baby's growing more than this baby weighs more than this one. And it's like, well, yeah, because they're siblings. When they come out, like, look at how different they are. But what we need to see is that growth. Are both of them growing on their same curve? Let's just look at it. Let's take the one baby away and watch the growth curve of the first one, and then take that baby away and watch the growth curve of the second one. Are they normal? Are they both normal and going up? Is somebody plateauing? That's a red flag, a plateau. Certainly, we don't want to see them go down, but if they start to plateau, that's a problem. If they're both going up, they're just growing at their own rates. And so this whole ridiculous idea that, especially with dye-dye twins, they have their separate placentas. What could be wrong? Certainly one of them could, have a placenta that's not functioning well, and they could be small for gestational age or have IUGR, we need to, yes, that's good to check in on that. But if they're both growing and they're both in a normal curve, then there's no problem at all. And yeah, trying to get people to understand this and not have the ultrasound readers get them all upset. It can be difficult.
Yeah, especially because we tend to say a lot, you know, that ultrasound are not that accurate with a single baby. Imagine with two babies where, you know, it all works on algorithm, and what they do is the measure, like if they're off even by 0.1 millimeters, it changes the all result and reading. So it's very hard with twins. Like I feel, and I've seen that the margin of errors can be actually greater when there are two babies, especially if they're moving a lot in the uterus.
And the further in pregnancy you get, and that's what they wanted. They try to scare people at the end. Oh, well, you're 37 weeks now, and now these babies, this one's this weight and this one's that weight. And it's like, you have no idea. And the margin of error is in my country, 2 pounds, which is a lot. It's a huge margin of error, plus or minus. And then you have one baby on top of another baby. You tell me you're going to get good measurements. No, I am more accurate. I like to palpate the babies and really get to know individually how each of them feel. And I use my hands, and I, you know, I absolutely encourage ultrasound as well for those that want it or need it. Mm-hmm. But my hands pick up, they have picked up some problematic things. So I really rely on that too in between, because we're not using ultrasound every visit, and I don't use it. So
yeah, absolutely. So you use palpation also with twins, right? You palpate both babies.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's really important because it helps me connect with them and just, you know, get to know who they are and their different personalities and what they feel like in there, because that's going to influence me during the labor. I need to know, you know, sort of what positions they're in and making sure that one's not going to hang up the other one. I want to see how much they move, and are they both trying to vie for the pelvis at the same time, and all these, just these different things. And so, yeah, I just like to get to know them, and they need to get to know me. So I have friends who are pre and perinatal psychologists. I really very much believe that, you know, they're sentient beings, and they understand what is going on in their own way.
I totally agree. So I guess you know, once the women that they have twins, they are able to get to term, it doesn't finish there, because especially like in Australia, but I think in USA it's very similar, they start proposing Caesars between 36 and 37 weeks. And the reason is that, you know, clinicians start talking a lot about the risk of stillborn.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is so, you know, if you listen to Stuart Fishbein talk about this same subject, because he talks a lot about multiples on his podcast, and he, you know, he points out that the risk of stillbirth once you get to term goes up even with singletons. And so, you know, with two babies, well, of course, it's just
you got two babies.
Both have the risk of stillbirth. And the thing is if we're concerned about that, then I think biophysical profile is certainly a good tool. And we know that biophysical profiles are accurate. And if you can get 8 out of 8 and you know that both babies are fine.
So what's a biophysical profile? Because I don't think we call it that way here, maybe.
Oh, it's when we use the ultrasound and We check on the breathing movements of the baby, and we score them for two, and then the heart rate and variability, and we score that too. What do you call it?
I don't know what they call it.
You don't know what they call it. We call it a BPP, biophysical profile. And so
Maybe they
each
call it that way, but I haven't heard it. Who knows?
So this is a nice tool that we have, and we know that this is evidence-based. If these babies score well, there's no reason not to continue on with the pregnancy. And so here they also want to either induce or do cesarean, usually by 37 or 38 weeks, because they start getting really, really antsy. With triplets, they want at 34 or 35
34.
weeks.
Yeah, I've heard
And the
that.
thing is, so it's just because they feel like, oh, even if we force these babies out a little bit before they're ready, they can go to the NICU and we can take care of them. Well, who wants their baby in the NICU? And why are we holding twins to a different standard? If there's a medical indication, suddenly blood pressure's creeping up, or we have some protein in the urine, we got, okay, well, it seems like your body is saying, I don't like this pregnancy anymore. Same thing as with a singleton. Then let's induce. It's perfectly fine because there's an indication to do so. But if there's not, then we need to leave it be. And the other thing is that, just saying across the board as a physician, well, we're going to do a cesarean at 37 weeks, so we'll book you in without any patient education whatsoever. Instead of saying, so this is what the literature shows, this is what, and this is why we do this, the risk if we don't do it, but they don't tell you the risk is like 0 point, whatever the risk of it not happening is 99 point like nine something, right? And so they all always want to say, oh, it's one in X amount, or they always, it's the absolute versus relative risk, and they always want to use the scarier route rather than actually saying that really your actual risk is quite low for this happening, but it's not zero, so let's section you, even though there's no guarantees with that either. So yeah, it's
Yeah,
very
that's
important.
true. That's true. That's true. And I guess, the main problem is also that a lot of women get told around 28 weeks, that if their babies, they're not both head down in a lot of, hospital, they want them to be both head down. If they're not both head down, then they will not even offer an induction and it will be straight away a cesarean section. And I've heard, women wanting a vaginal birth, like in groups being like, how do I turn my two breech babies, to head down? And they're like 29 weeks. And I'm like, doesn't matter at this point,
Yeah, and the thing about the, oh, if they're both head down, what an unreasonable expectation to have when we know that statistically 45% of twin pregnancies, both babies are head down. So not even half. The rest are some combination of vertex breech. And then the very, very tiny sliver, like 0.7% are transverse in some sort of way. So, but the rest are all a combination: breech, vertex, vertex, breech, breech, breech. That's normal. And the babies, why are we not trusting that they know how they need to be inside the uterus? That is, and that's the difference, I think, between the medical model and. But even some midwives are like, oh, I wish both of these babies were in. It's like, why? Because even I will just say, we also know statistically that after the first baby comes out, there's a 20% chance that whatever that second baby's position is, 20% chance that it's going to change. So even
Mind
if it's
change.
cephalic, it could turn to breech. And I've had breech ones turn to cephalic, and that's been very disappointing for me, but because I really like the breeches.
Yeah, that is what happened to me. I had one cephalic and the second one was breech, so I was hoping and wishing to have a breech birth. But instead she turned and she was head down and I was like, what? I was in
Wow.
disbelief.
Yeah.
So it is
Yeah.
true. It is
Yeah.
absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I guess before we go into, positions with also home birth, the other thing that I've heard a lot of time, this was new to me actually, but I've heard it recently so much, is that clinicians now want the first baby to be bigger than the second baby. Otherwise, they would not offer a vaginal birth. And I was just in disbelief. I'm like, what do you mean? But apparently, like, I was like on a thread and there were like 100 and plus comments. And apparently, all these moms, this in Australia, all these moms were confirming that they were told this.
Wow. I haven't heard that yet here, but I'll have to ask around about it. That just and how unreasonable. And again, because we know how unreliable ultrasound is in determining weights. And and it's just so subjective with the ultrasonographer at that point. Like, so that's just very, very unreasonable. And again, it's just another it every step of the way, the message to women is that, oh, this can't be done. You can't do this. This isn't normal. Your baby's too big. Your baby's too small. Your baby's not in the right position. There's something wrong with this. Everything is right, and they're trying to find things that are wrong. And that just sounds like yet another reason to sabotage somebody's birth. Like made up. Why would it matter if you're fully dilated and you push out a 6-pound baby and then you have a 7-pound second twin? What does it matter?
Yeah,
What?
that's exactly right. And I did say to them, actually, my first baby was like 2.770, which I don't know how much is in pound. And then third baby. And then the second baby was 3 kilos, 140. So they were like 400 grams, which is like, what is that? I don't know how much is in pound, but they were 400 grams different between each other, And even if you see them now, they are so different. One is she's like chubby and the other one she's skinny. They're just opposite, but it's just the way they were. So yeah, that's why I'm like, they're two entities, two different babies, two the sisters, like they don't need to be the same.
And so, and why wouldn't it work? Because we know birth works most of the time if we just get out of the way. And really it's less is more when it comes to birth. And even more so with multiples, quite honestly. So.
So true. So let's say we have finally got to 36 weeks. For a woman to be like, I would say, like, it's important to say also that. For a home birth to kind of being successful, a woman needs to like meet some kind of criteria, I would say, right? So the first thing is hopefully to get to 36 weeks. So that's term for you, yeah. And
And
then
I let them know though that they're probably going to, depending on if they've given birth before, if they've gone to term or beyond term, I'm like, you should just plan on following the same suit. It's not, if you did not go into preterm labor for whatever reason, there's no reason to believe that you, now that you've made it to term, that you won't go completely full term. And I tell them about all the clients that I have that have done that. And I think when women know it's possible, they're like, oh yeah, I can do it. It's almost like a challenge for them. Like, oh, I'm gonna do
so true.
it. So even though they might be really ready to be done, it's too big, it's two babies, it's a lot. What gestation were you?
So I went until 38.3.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And they were like totally ready and full term, and I was
Yeah.
ready also. So I was like, I'm gonna burn some sage.
Yeah.
It did the thing, it worked. But I
Yeah.
was ready, like ready, cooked.
Yes, and oftentimes they will come a little bit early, 30, 37, 38 weeks, because they are ready. Their lungs are developed, and they tend to just come when they need to come, and they know, and your body knows. So, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So for a home birth, if a woman with twins wants to have a home birth, if she comes to term, she is healthy, the babies are fine, she's either DCDA or MCDA, she can have a home birth, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
I like that. I like that. And so normally when you do like twins home birth, how many people are there as in clinicians and, you know, like midwives, doctors, how does it work?
Yeah. So that's a good question. And a lot of it depends on the client and what their desires are. For example, I helped somebody last spring, and she happened to be having triplets, but she had had three home births with a midwife. Then her fourth birth was unassisted, just her and her husband. And that's what she wanted for this next pregnancy. And then she realized she was having three babies. So she knew that was not going to happen. At first, she thought she'd have to have a cesarean, and then she found out she actually could stay home. And so I knew that she really wanted the most private birth possible, but that it was just going to be really hard because we, you know, even if she had just had two babies, it's possible, certainly. And I'm sure you probably have listeners who are like, oh, you know, like I only had two people there, or I free birthed and I didn't have anybody there but my husband, or whatever. And yes, of course, but there's a higher chance of you know, issues and so forth. But so you would think with a triplet birth, you might need even more attendance. And what ended up happening was I really talked to her about all the different possibilities ahead of time. I said I would arrange a team with as few people as possible. So I got two really, really wonderful, very experienced, advanced students. They were just at the end of their apprenticeship, and they had attended many multiples and many breaches. They knew how to do IVs. They knew how to manage hemorrhage. They knew how to resuscitate babies. I knew they were going to be great, and they were going to be super respectful and quiet, because I hate talking at births because it's really rude. And so, and then we had another student there, very green, just charting. That's all she did, was write down everything that was happening. So it was just us. It was just four people, which for three, that was a lot. You know, that was we needed more, but I mean, we might've needed more, but we didn't, you know? So it was okay. The birth was actually rather smooth. But, you know, generally speaking, most midwives, I would say here in the US, they would like two people for each, two people for the mom, two people for the first baby, and two people for the second baby. So six attendants altogether. Oh. And for me, I think that that's more than necessary.
Yeah.
Because you're not likely to have both babies being needing resuscitation. If you have to do anything, maybe you have to resuscitate the second baby.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with less people. And in fact, the most recent triplet birth that I did a few weeks ago, there were six attendants, but we needed, so we had three midwives, me and two experienced midwives, and then three students who literally just, one of them was advanced and she could do IVs and things. So she was helping the midwives. And then the other two were just for charting. And then afterwards, for the cleanup and the newborn exams, and, you know, they came in handy for those things. But otherwise, they needed to just be in the corner of the room and be quiet, because we needed the birth to unfold. So this is the problem with having too many people at a birth, as you know, we don't, because we're mammals, we don't do well being observed in birth. And I'm well aware of that,
which that's is exactly why I don't really right.
Like talking, you know, I don't like talking at a birth. If somebody asks, if the mom asks me something, I will say something, Or if I sense she needs something, I will say, but otherwise I'm not going to talk to her. Are you feeling pressure? Oh, tell me if this and tell me if that. She'll tell me if she has to tell me something. You know? And so, and I don't need to say, that's great. I can see the head. You're doing it. Keep going. She does not need me to say, especially if she's had other babies. You know, once in a while, somebody will go, especially a primate, like, am I doing it? Or I feel like I'm not doing a good job. And it's like, oh no, I can see the head. You're doing a great job. Like, that's all they needed. That's all they needed. They don't need these big, huge explanations taking them out of their primal brain, you know? So I'm very much anti too many people at a birth. And I myself birthed unassisted at home. So I'm very much, you know, like that's, but I have
love
been a
midwife
for a long time. So I mean, I kind of knew, I knew it, but it was still a 36 hour labor. It wasn't easy. But I was not a very good client for myself. I really tired myself out. But yeah, so I try to be really mindful. So the answer way back to is depending on what that woman wants. And some people are a little bit more, I just want to make sure that everything, if I know that they're a little bit more, high maintenance, so that, for lack of a better way to call it, but they just want all the T's crossed and the I's dotted and they don't care who's there, then I will have more people, because who doesn't want to go to a twin birth? Like, I could easily get everybody raised.
Yeah,
I'll do it. I'll do it.
Yeah.
You don't even have to pay me. And so,
So true.
And so just for a learning experience, oftentimes we have others, you know, come to observe. But you know, I'm just used to functioning on so many different levels, at a birth kind of on my own. I would never do multiples on my own because I can't do things simultaneously. And that would just be dangerous. But I feel like very skilled people that each know how to do all the things that need to be done. We have it covered. We're probably going to have enough if we have three skilled people there and then an assistant. So
yeah, gotcha. That's perfect. Yeah, I think if there is three skilled, you know, midwife and then one assistant, that'll probably be amazing for a twin birth. That's amazing. So then if we go to the positions of the babies, you know, when we are talking about home birth, I know, you know, a lot of women, of course, as soon as the first baby is breached, they offer cesarean section, like there's no talk about it. But in a home birth setting, I guess, you know, like what are your considerations with the positions of the babies?
I tell the mom, as long as the first baby is in a longitudinal lie, breech or cephalic, I don't care, one or the other, somebody's got to be in the pelvis. The second baby can be doing whatever they want to do because it's likely going to change anyway. So I don't care, but I need one baby in the pelvis. And almost always we get a baby in the pelvis. It's pretty rare for that baby A to be transverse. It's very, very rare.
Yeah, that's so true, because I've palpated, you know, like different twins in my life as well, and I've always felt one in the pelvis anyway, so either breech or cephalic. And actually, like, to be honest, I felt more cephalic than breech, to be honest, but maybe that's just my experience.
Yeah, I think statistically the first one's more apt to be cephalic. You're right.
Yeah, awesome. And then so once, I guess, like the fear that most moms and practitioners have is once the first baby is out, they jump into wanting to extract the second one. What is your practice around that? I mean, like once the first baby is out and all is well, what do you do?
Yeah, so I always let the mom know that depending on what is going on with especially if the second baby's breech or transverse, that there is always a possibility that if the heart tones go down or if there's any kind of bleeding, that it's possible I would have to do an extraction, but Probably not too likely, depending if when we're talking with twins here, that goes up with triplets. But and I always let them know, and we talk about that and what that looks like. But otherwise, I don't have any hard and fast rule about let's go break the bag of the second baby, which is what they like to do, and let's just like get the show on the road. I like that first baby to come out and the mother to get to know that baby, even if it's just for a few minutes, and try to maybe nurse a little bit. We leave the cord intact, unless or until there's a reason to cut it, and it's usually because it's either too short, so the mom
Which
can't
is
even
what
get it
happened
off
to me.
to the yeah. And so then we kind of wait for it to be done, and then we cut it. Or it's like, I am having contractions, and she wants to, hand that baby off, and but it's kind of attached still, and so it's logistical reasons that keep the cord from remaining intact. But that baby still can get what it needs to from the cord. And then, my experience is that most second babies come within an hour. And of those, most of them come within the first 5, 10, 15 minutes, actually. And then we have some outliers at like, 30, 40 minutes, and then some hour and 10, something like that. But we're listening really well to that second baby, and make sure just that second baby sounds okay. And as long as they do, it's fine to wait for it to come. Sometimes, depending if we have a grand mal tip, part of the issue is that the baby's not down well into the pelvis because it's all of a sudden the uterus is really roomy, and so it's kind of almost flopping forward, and they actually have to pick up their bellies underneath, and so as to move the baby into the pelvis, so they actually feel some pressure, especially if the baby's breech. They don't get that same kind of cephalic pressure like they do with the head. So sometimes that, they need to get in a more upright position if they happen to be lying back nursing the first baby or whatever. It's like, okay, are you getting some contractions with the nursing? Yes, okay, well, you don't need to labor again. You're completely dilated, but you do need gravity. So let's get up and see if we can get this baby to come. And usually they just with gravity, they will come.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you find that once the first baby comes out, because like for the second baby is like falling off, like an apartment, the heartbeat might kind of get low but then recover?
Yeah, I've heard that a few times, and I do wait. I'm vigilant then, and I'm thinking, oh, I might need to do an extraction. That happened to me not too long ago, and it did. There was some bradycardia there, not with contractions or anything. And I'm like, but then it always recovered and sounded great. And I'm like, oh, I bet he's kind of like on his cord a little bit sometimes when he's moving around. And it happened a few times, but again, it wasn't what I would label distress. And I was in a little battle with myself in my head, like thinking, okay, if any, more obstetric minded person was here, they would be like, might as well just go in and get it. And that would have been reasonable given what we were hearing. However, there was always this really good recovery and just long bouts without that happening. And the baby just sounded great. And I'm like, no, I'm not going in yet, because I knew she really, really did not want an extraction. I knew I didn't want to do one, but I would. And I know it's not fun for the baby either. And so I rolled the dice, and I listened to my intuition though, really. And I'm like, I think we're going to be okay. I think it'll be okay. But I knew that if it wasn't okay, ultimately, I'm like, you're gonna beat yourself up. So I really listened to my intuition, and I felt like it would be okay. And sure enough, we were okay, and that baby came
Ah.
out. There was no meconium in the fluid. There was, so he hadn't been in any kind of distress. He was just messing with his own cord, probably.
Yeah, I call it the fall from, like a 30-floor apartment. That's how I call it, because I feel like I've seen it, like in this year. Like I'm a baby midwife, eh? Only like not only, even 15 years. But in these years, I've seen it. And when that happened, though, because it's in a hospital setting, there is something that happens straight away. It's either like straight away GA or extraction straight away. And so there is not the time for this baby to actually like get into that position and recover,
Recover.
but again, like when you speak about intuition, it's something that, like, in my opinion and in my experience, like in a hospital setting, is shut down.
Oh,
So,
yeah.
most practitioners, like when they are in a hospital setting, they are running high in like adrenaline, and so there is no intuition there. It's just systematic actions, pretty much. So,
No, I really agree, and I wouldn't hesitate to do an extraction, but I want it to be a real clear indication, and it really wasn't, and I am so glad that I didn't do it, and I know the mother's glad that I didn't do it, because I did not want to. But I would have if I really felt like he was in any kind of jeopardy, and I just felt like, no, I think we're going to be good. And fortunately, I was right.
And so, what happened if like the second twins doesn't come within like 1 to 2 hours? Do you still wait? Because I've heard like twins coming even like 12 hours apart, which I'm like, no way I'm doing that. As a mom, not as a midwife, but as a mom, having to wait that long after you birth a baby, I feel like it's torture, to be honest. But that's just my opinion, of course.
Well, I think there are certainly the standard medical model, they want that first baby or the second baby out like immediately.
In
So,
minutes, in minutes. Within
in
5 minutes
minutes,
has to be out.
Minutes. So it's not and I think a lot of midwives like that, within an hour, let's have that second baby come. And then and you know I know I think the longest I waited was in Sierra Leone. I had a twin mama there, and it was about 8 hours, and she wasn't really contracting or anything, but I said, well, let me just, see, make sure your cervix, because the cervix can shut down, and then they do have to labor all over again. And this is the problem with if we're going to wait that long. I have not had the experience of the cervix shutting down within 30 minutes or an hour or even 2 hours. I had, OBs say, well, I don't want to wait more than an hour. That cervix could shut down. And so part of the problem with waiting too long is if it does start to close up a little bit, with some contractions, it will open up again. However, if you are listening to that second baby, you're monitoring, and the heart tones do start to tank, and you do get some distress, and you go in to do an extraction, and the cervix isn't fully dilated, you could be in big trouble. So that's where it could be tricky. And so it's this is why it's nice to have that second baby come. And the other thing is that I really like to listen closely to the second baby, and the longer it is, it's almost like they need to be on a CTG to really, I don't want really spaced out intermittent monitoring. We really do want to pick up if they do go into some sort of a distress, and it's not uncommon for them to do that. It's very uncommon for the first one most of the time, but the second one, no, I hear all sorts of things with that second baby and the heart rate, and they tend to come out a little bit less in their bodies than the first one, and a lot of it's because they were just you know, they were abandoned by their sibling, and they do what is going on. And then they're like, they had that 30 story drop, like you said, and it's just like there's all these things changing, and they're just kind of like, what is going on here? And they just don't know. And so that's why I think there's just a lot going on with them. And then, of course, there's always the possibility, especially if they're mono dye, that the placenta could start to separate. And then we don't know that unless we're really listening closely to the heart rate. So there's just so many variables. So I would say that maybe I'm a little bit more conservative in my old age, the more I've learned and the more I have experienced. But it doesn't make me fearful. It just makes me tune into every situation and figure out how we're gonna deal with that situation. So I will not tell you that, oh yeah, well, this is exactly what I would do with all my twin. It just depends on who they are. Everybody really gets very custom care, for lack of a better term, because what I might do with one person in the same exact situation, I would do differently with another person, because they're different people and they're different babies, and I'm going to make different decisions based on all of the information. So it's not this cookie cutter thing where, oh yeah, after 30 minutes I'm going to break the water and get the baby out. No, never, ever. So
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I think my last question is about, actually, I've got two more questions. The first one is about the extraction. Where did you learn that?
I have had to do extractions in the field with MSF, and I've practiced on mannequins and things, but I've also, you're gonna laugh, like everything else, go on YouTube. You can watch
Love
somebody
it.
demonstrating extractions for you, and
Yeah.
it's really good. Like, if there's something that you need to know how to do in that way, you can find them. You might have to dig around a little bit, but there's some medical videos on there with obstetricians demonstrating extractions. But it is not difficult. The difficult, I honestly, I think it's more difficult to get a placenta, a retained placenta, because you don't know
Yeah.
what you're going to find. Is it going to be all
Yeah.
stuck to the wall? Like, and exactly where is it? It's so much easier finding a baby. But it's yeah. So it's just a matter of doing it. In fact, the last one that I did a few weeks ago, I had an experienced midwife with me, and she said, "I've never done one, but now that I saw you do it, I think I could do one," because she knows the idea of what needs to be done. And she
Yeah,
saw,
yeah.
she, I think, and so it was good for her. You know,
Yeah.
you can't see what I'm doing anyway. My hand's just inside of
Yeah.
there. You have no idea, but
Yeah.
you're just looking for a foot,
Yeah.
and hopefully two, and just bringing them down, but they're
That's
slippery.
amazing. That's
And
amazing.
yeah,
Yeah.
but it is not a difficult thing to do. You just have to be fearless and bold. And just go for it. You cannot be tentative. You just have to be methodical and just go in and get it done. It's none of this, oh, let me try to do this. Nothing slow about, I mean, yes, it is slow in a certain way. You want to be gentle with the mother's tissue and, of course, the baby and all of that, but still, you need to do it in a timely manner. So, not too difficult.
Yeah, amazing. So I guess the other last question is about the placenta and placentas. So with dye, we can have either two placenta or one placenta that has fused. So in what order are we gonna see the placentas be born normally, usually?
Yeah, normally we are going to, just like with a singleton birth, they're going to come out after the babies. It's really rare for a placenta, like, and it would happen with a dye pregnancy, where a baby would come and then the placenta would come and then another baby and then the placenta. That's very rare, but it has happened. It also happens that sometimes the placenta starts to detach the longer that second baby is in there. And it's like, okay, well, I think I'm done now. And it starts to detach and you see some bleeding, and then you know you have to get that next baby out. But
Yeah.
otherwise, it usually comes out in a timely manner after the
Yeah.
second baby.
Yeah. And have you noticed that like a twin mom bleeds a tiny bit more than a singleton?
Yeah, a little bit more, but not but commensurate with the amount of, you know, the placenta that has just come. But we're always that's the one thing we really want to be on top of and, you know, watch for. And, you know, that second baby needing a little help and the mom bleeding and needing to be
Yeah.
on top of that uterus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you still do like physiological third stage, or do you give the
Yeah.
injection to mom?
Yeah, usually I do. Again, that is something that I discuss with the clients individually. And if I have a grand mal tip, or maybe somebody who bled a little bit more than they wanted to with their last pregnancy, I'm like, we can do a managed third stage if you prefer. We can, or we can wait and see. And if you are just bleeding too much, then you're just gonna, I'm gonna be like giving you that Pitocin and you're gonna be saying yes at the same time I'm injecting you. You know, how do you want to see this? And of course, if they want to use herbs and things, we have those, and we can use herbs on top of the other things as well. But I discuss it with the parents. Some women want an IV, a Heplock put in just in case they need not necessarily Pitocin, but maybe fluids afterwards just to feel better. It's just a lot, you know, just gave birth to two babies and a giant placenta. So it's just a lot, and it can help some moms feel better afterwards. And they like having that nice open access there, and we just hook it right up and we're done. So that is something that we discuss ahead of time too. And if somebody says, absolutely not, I don't want an IV anywhere near me, I'm like, no problem at all. Mark it down, you know, and absolutely not, I do not want to manage third stage. That is absolutely fine. But I'm a little bit more, I might push it a little bit more, like I said, with a grand mal tip, who we're going to expect we might see more bleeding anyway, even with a singleton. But certainly more with a distended uterus after a multiple pregnancy. So yeah, all the things just to
absolutely.
take into consideration, but again, nothing that is standard with everybody.
So thank you so much for all this information. I just want to like quickly just say that so with the home birth, it can be done if both babies are breached as well.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yep. I've done several sets of breech twins. I did when I was in South Sudan, I had two sets back to back within a couple days of each other, and all four babies, the two with this mother and the two with that mother, they were all breech and they were all born in the call.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm like, well, now I'm gonna buy a lottery ticket because like that's a bad.
So true, so true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. So I guess what would you say? Well, the first question is, what would you say to a twin mom that she would like to have a home birth, but she is on the fence because every clinician, midwife, obstetrician, everybody has said to her, you're not allowed?
Yeah, I hate that word.
But it's true. It's true. This is
I
what is
know,
happening.
I know. And it's awful. And then people feel forced into having to birth on their own. And it hurts my heart, because if it's fine if you want to have an unassisted birth like I did, but if you don't want one and you feel forced into it because otherwise you are gonna, your choice is unassisted or cesarean, I would go unassisted every time. Who wants to walk into surgery?
Yep.
So I would say, don't, you're, it's your body, it's your choice, and if you really want someone to help you, can find, there are even midwives that travel. There are traveling midwives that travel the world helping people, and the ones that do tend to have skills like breech and twins. They're not just two or three years out of their school. They're experienced midwives that have probably, they're not practicing anymore in their own practice, and they will travel the world. So you can find traveling midwives to come. Yeah.
Yeah,
Especially
absolutely.
to your beautiful country.
But you know what? Yesterday we were in a chat, right, with midwives. We've got a chat with endorsed midwife, is the same as independent midwife, you know. And someone was asking, like, would you guys like attend twin births? And it's like maybe there were like 150 midwives or something. Everybody said no. And I said yes.
You were the only one out of 150 midwives?
Out of,
Oh my
yeah.
gosh.
I said, yes, I will. I will, and I'm going to. And then someone had, I was looking after twins, and she said, no, I don't feel confident, and I will tell her to go to the hospital. And so I just said, like, a little sad face, and I said, well, like, this is the reality, though, you know? And so I
Yeah.
guess, like, for me, I said yes. And I also, like, said it publicly. And I say to all my colleagues here, I said, I have come to the conclusion that I want to attend twin birth. And I will attend twin births. That's the end of the conversation. Okay. And everybody's like, but what about your registration? What about? It doesn't matter, because if, like, when you do everything right, in the right way, they can report you as many times as they want. But
Yeah.
APRA will give you back your registration because you haven't done anything wrong. Because you're gonna say to them, okay, what's the other end of the spectrum for this woman? A free birth? Like, where
Yeah.
is the duty of care that we do have? You know what I mean?
Right. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. No, and I think that's really wonderful of you, and it's so brave of you. And if maybe one other midwife who is near you just can have that confidence to be able to attend twin births with you, they will then
Yeah. So I
become
have people
more
that they are going, they
comfortable.
want to come, they will come. So I've already said to other midwives here and there, I said, if I do a twin birth, are you coming? They're like, yeah.
Yeah,
So they
good.
will, like, you know
Yes.
what I mean? They
Yes, because
will
they
not
need
do
to
it, but
birth
they
it.
will come. So
Yes.
I know that I will have people to come with me. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? So I
absolutely.
think, like, it's like the 4 minutes mile, you know, and we will get there in Australia as well. We just need someone to do it. To do it and to say it, not to do it and hide it.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree 100%. And I think once these midwives attend some twin births, they'll realize there's not, they were afraid of nothing. There's nothing they can't, that wouldn't happen in a singleton birth. More like, I mean, it's so incredibly rare to have like a collision, compaction, impaction. Like that's probably not going to happen. And so the only thing that would happen is maybe you would have to resuscitate a baby. You have to do that at a singleton birth.
That's exactly
Maybe
right.
you're probably not going to have a shoulder dystocia. You're
Nah.
probably not, you're probably going to have two babies that just come sliding right out. And if there's a little bit of bleeding, I think you know how to manage those
That's
things. So
exactly right.
there's really the it's just really, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah. And especially, like, with DCDA, like, I really need people to stop fearing so much DCDA. Like, I had DCDA, like, they're just, like, believe me, they're just two babies.
Yes. That is the literally lo and I don't even like the word risk. That is like, there's just what it, it's just two babies. It's the same as if she was just having one. They have their separate everything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's
And
exactly
that's the way
right.
I felt about these, the most recent triplets that I did. They were tri triplets, so they all had their own everything. And so I'm
How
like,
amazing is that? Like, three
yes.
placenta, three sacs. So they were just three babies,
Yes.
independent.
And they're siblings. And if I can show you pictures of them right now, and I can tell you which one is which, because they all look so incredibly different. They all look very different. Two girls and a boy, and I can pick them out in the they because they all came out looking very different because they're not identical. So yeah, it was just, I'm like, well, if I don't help this woman with triplets, who would I help? She's
That's
31.
exactly right.
She's had other home births, other vaginal births.
Yeah.
Zero. She's never
Yeah.
bled. She
Yeah.
loves giving birth. She's good.
Yeah.
She was 38.2. She went as far as you did with your pregnancy
Yeah.
with
No,
triplets. You
I know.
know? And I'm like, so what is, you know, why wouldn't I help her?
Yeah.
And there was no reason to not. It was really
Yeah.
quite uneventful.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think it's you know, that doesn't mean that I would help if I had somebody contact me tomorrow for triplets, I would have to think long and hard. Who are they? What do they look like? What is their health profile? What are, you know, I don't say yes just to ever, oh, that sounds like fun. Yes, I'm in. No, you know, I still have to look at who they are. I don't help just anybody. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is what I said, to some of my colleagues as well. I said, home birth with twins can be easy peasy, but it also depends what happened prior to that, and as I said, what you eat and the way you move and the way you think as well, it's gonna make a huge difference to the birth, of course. So yeah. So I guess last question is, what can you say to all these midwives, especially in Australia, that they're so fearful of twins?
Well, hopefully, if they've listened to this, they're maybe a little bit less fearful. I would tell them to just kind of really look at it and figure out what it is that is holding them back, or what are they afraid of? And, you know, challenge them to face that fear. And honestly, you know, I just think that that you know, it's our duty as midwives to help women, you know, help uphold their autonomy. And if we
Yeah.
have clients that come to us that want to birth safely with a midwife, if you are comfortable with your skills in singleton birth, then by all means, you have the skills to be able to attend a twin birth. Especially if you're going to have other experienced midwives there, and hopefully you are. You're not going to be alone. So just remember, you shouldn't be doing this alone. There will be other midwives, and hopefully there's somebody that has some breech skills, but you want to always review your breech skills before going into a twin birth, because one of them's bound to be breech by term. So the good percentage, about
Yeah.
40. 45, 50%. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for giving us so much time, really. And when are you coming back to Australia?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, Breach Without Borders is gonna, I, because I was there teaching with them back in
Yeah.
2022 at the end of the
Yeah.
year, as you know, because you were
Yeah.
there.
Yes, that's
And,
where we met.
yes. And, so I'm not sure. I think we're setting our calendar for 2025, and we're supposed to go back, and hopefully Dr. Bissetts will be teaching with us in Sydney again. And I really want to go back to Tasmania because I loved it so much. I just loved it so much. That was my
It?
favorite place. And then David went to all the other places. He went to
Yeah.
Melbourne, went to Brisbane, all of the wonderful places. So I haven't seen any of those places yet. So
Yeah.
we'll see, maybe at some point in 2025, depending on my MSF schedule in the in out in the field.
Yeah. That would be
Yeah.
good to come and teach us twins as well then.
Yeah, my the Twins and Breech Masterclass, I would love to.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that would be so good. Anyway, thank you again. Whenever you will be coming, I'll be contacting you. Maybe we can organize like a twins one in this area as well. I live a couple of hours from Sydney, and nobody ever comes here because it's like, so we always have to travel 2 hours into Sydney. But there is lots of birth workers in this area as well.
Wonderful. Yeah. No, I would love to.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Awesome. I'll put all your details down the in the North Shore anyway, and thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. It's been a
Bye.
pleasure. Bye.
Okay, my friend, thank you so much for listening again. I think we are in for something really special in this podcast. Let's start this new movement. Hey, buckle up. There's a lot of new things and awesome things that you're gonna hear from me. And as you know, just do me a favor, please. Just take a screenshot, put it in your stories, and tag me. I promise I will definitely reshare you. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.